You are Locked On Lakers, your daily podcast on the Los Angeles Lakers. Part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Welcome, everybody, to the Locked On Lakers podcast. I'm Anthony Irwin. I am joined, as always, by Harrison Fagan. Harrison, if you had to rank the NBA's young cores, how stupid would you have to be to rank the Lakers last?
Well, last in the whole league or last on a list of 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, hypothetically?
Either.
Last on a list of last in the entire league? I mean, you'd have to be brain dead. Last on a list of eight?
You'd have to be brain dead.
So that's still pretty bad.
We're going to talk about, so the Lakers beat the Miami Heat tonight. They beat them 131-113. They scored, like I said, 131 points against a statistically, this is an objectively good defense that the Lakers ripped to shreds without Josh Hart. And Isaiah Thomas played the best game he's played so far as a Laker. So we're gonna start with that. We're going to, you know, talk about the good and the bad and whatever we saw from that game. And then we're going to extend that conversation into me asking the question, how close are these Lakers currently to being a playoff team? And what would have had to go their way in order for them to be a playoff team? So and that's going to let us, you know, broaden the scope into what expectations might be for next year, moving forward the rest of this year, whatever. As always, make sure you guys are following the show on Megaphone/Panoply, iTunes, TuneIn, Stitcher, Today's Fast Break, Spotify, Alexa, Lakers Nation, where Harrison writes, Lakers Outsiders, where I write. You can follow Harrison on Twitter at HMFagan. You can follow me on Twitter at Anthony Irwin LA. Let's go ahead and start with this game. We'll narrow the scope for just this game. We would be remiss not to mention how good both Julius Randle looked and how good Isaiah Thomas looked. And I want to start with Randle because, to me, it was significant that Miami started both Kelly Olynyk and Hassan Whiteside in order to deal, in my opinion, it seemed like they were trying to deal with Julius Randle, and it didn't matter. He ripped those guys to shreds. He finishes the game with 25 points on 8 of 13 shooting, 9 of 9 from from the free throw line. He finishes with 6 rebounds, 2 assists, 1 steal, 1 block. And a plus 15 in the game. That's when we, you know,
he's ripping everyone to shreds lately.
Right. When we, you know, I can understand some people getting kind of annoyed of the amount of praise. Eventually, for whatever reason, it winds up getting kind of annoying. I think that's more telling of the person who was listening than anything. But we have done a lot of praising Julius Randle, and it's for this reason. And Bobby Marks tweeted to Eric Pincus tonight that he was in the house. He was in Miami for that game. And he said, I'm paraphrasing because I don't have it right in front of me, but he said that the Lakers should do whatever it takes to keep Julius Randle in a Laker uniform. He's legit, man. He's a really good NBA player.
Yeah. Oh, I thought you were talking. I thought when you said he's legit, you meant Bobby Marks.
No.
Randle also very legit. And yeah, just lately people have not been able to stop him, or I guess really the whole year. And I mean, all his benching or his not benching, but his coming off of the bench is going to be, I think, in one of the larger things that we talk about when we're talking about could the Lakers have been a playoff team, you know, hindsight being 2020. And were this January team the team that played the whole year? Would they be a playoff team or how far off would they be? And then what does that mean going forward into next year? And, you know, Randle's been as huge of a part of that as anyone, I think. Luke Walton said after tonight's game that Lonzo Ball was the best player on the floor. I think you'd be hard-pressed to argue with that. I think he was probably the Lakers' most helpful player. But Randle, once again, was top three, at the very least, top two. And he's probably, on aggregate this whole year, been the Lakers' best player. He's relentless getting to the basket. He plays hard on defense. He just, like, center, we've gone over this, it feels like a million times. Centers are too big to stay in front of him. Power forwards aren't strong enough to stop him. And he looks at his guy, he sizes him up, and he does his thing. And he's become a better passer. He's become a better post player. There really isn't anything other than shooting that he hasn't gotten demonstrably better at this
I would even argue his shooting has gotten demonstrably better considering his abilities at the free throw line. Like, that is...
Yeah, okay, going 9 of 9 from the free throw line is good. That's, like, that's not... Especially on this team, that's really good.
Well, that's always the knock that people have on Brandon Ingram, right? That even as his three-point percentage has creeped up, his free throw percentage hasn't necessarily followed suit. And jackasses like Danny LaRue use that to continue to knock on him.
You said you weren't going to call people names.
Okay. Brilliant minds like Danny LaRue.
Thank you. That was nicer.
Are using that to continue to knock Brandon Ingram. But fine, if you're going to do that, then you have to then praise Julius Randle for his improvement at the free throw line. And I wanted to, before we move on really quickly, also shout out Isaiah Thomas. Because, look, I have not been the kindest to him, but he finishes tonight with 29 points, 6 assists, 4 rebounds on 11 of 20 shooting, 6 of 11 from 3. A couple things that I've kind of noticed in his game, and I'll let you build on it on the other side of the break. But one, the first and foremost thing that I have to give him credit for is his ability to just pick things right, you know, hit the ground running with the Lakers bigs in the pick and roll. He does a really good job of utilizing angles, and he does a really good job also of communicating in the pick and roll. There was a really cool play tonight that led to a Julius Randle and one last night by the time everybody is listening to this. He kind of lobbed the ball over the top of the defense, but as he was going around on the pick and roll, he was yelling at Randle, roll, roll, roll. And he had a really good angle on what was going on in the secondary defensive areas. And he just lobbed it over. Randle did a really good job, as he has all season, of catching it and finishing it at the rim. It led to an and-one, and Randle obviously made the free throw going 9 of 9. Is there anything I think he's made? I think Isaiah Thomas has kind of recognized his own shortcomings physically, whether it be
pun intended,
whether it be health or actual height. But I think he's done a good job of recognizing those flaws in his game, and going away from those flaws in order to help set up other guys in the pick and roll. And that has made him a more useful offensive player than he would have been, and frankly, that he was in Cleveland when he was trying to just recreate what he was in Boston. Harrison, I'll let you pick up on that point here in a second. All right, do your thing.
I think the other thing that Isaiah has realized is that he can't come in and torpedo another locker room the way that he did in Cleveland. And so while part of his happiness and part of his playing better is probably that he's being given a bigger role here than he was in Cleveland, but I also think that he's recognizing that, and he's recognizing, like, the leash that he's getting, and maybe he tugged on it a little bit too much his first three games with the team. He was desperate to go out there and, like, after the trade deadline, go out and show the Cavs, like, hey, F you shouldn't have traded me. And the Lakers lost all three games. And I'm not going to say that was all Isaiah Thomas's fault. I certainly don't think that it was. But since the Lakers have come back from the All-Star break, he's still confident. He's still jacking when he's open, but he doesn't seem to be forcing things. And some of this might be playing the result a little bit too. Everything looks better when the team is winning, but he just seems to be using a little bit smarter shot selection. And he's realized, like, I need to pass sometimes, and I need to set these guys up sometimes in order to ingratiate myself and in order to start to be like a liked teammate. And so that these guys, like, don't freeze me out, kind of like it seemed like was starting to happen in Cleveland. And because, you know, if you come in and you're a little guy who doesn't play any defense and you just shoot every time on the other end, people aren't going to want to cover for your mistakes. They're going to get fed up with you. And so by doing things like making an effort to feed Julius Randle and making an effort to make the extra pass when it's not so obvious that he needs to shoot, I think that he's going to not only kind of have better chemistry with these teammates, but he's also going to make a bigger impact on the Lakers. And we've spent a lot of time over the last couple weeks, like, talking about his theoretical pairing with Lonzo Ball. But I thought just as big tonight, now that Ball is starting again, is that Isaiah Thomas showed that he can be that spark plug off the bench for the Lakers when he's there by himself as well. And he can kind of be their super sub six man that they were probably hoping he could be.
I thought an underratedly important stretch of last night's game was Brandon Ingram gets hurt. Justice Winslow, just watch out. I am looking for you. I will hunt you down for injuring my large adult skinny son. But I thought it, you know, the game very, it wasn't necessarily in the balance. I think the Lakers still had like a 15 to 17 point lead with a couple minutes left. And that's
it not, always feels like it's in the balance with this team. We've seen too many runs go over wrong the last over five the last years, couple for sure. years. Yeah.
And so, but
it's like they're up by 40. I'm not feeling too safe. I'm going to leave this on for a little bit longer.
So the Lakers bring in Luke Walton, brings in Thomas for Ingram due to the injury. And you know, I was kind of sort of ready for things to kind of go to hell because, like you said, not specifically because of Isaiah Thomas, because he did play well tonight, last night, but just because, like you said, the last 5 years have taught us not to anticipate anything.
Something,
good.
Whatever is most hilarious will go wrong.
Right. So I just kind of, but look, he came in and they got the job done. He handled the ball. He did a really good job, him and Lonzo. And we aren't going to be able to, I don't think, touch on Lonzo Ball specifically tonight. But Lonzo has been freaking magnificent since he came back.
One thing that I did, this is kind of an amazing stat that I did want to say about Lonzo Ball. Since he came back 4 games ago, the Lakers are outscoring teams by 23.5 points while he is on the floor.
I'll say this, like, about Lonzo.
Yeah, you're speechless, right? Yeah.
I didn't accidentally, but I muted myself. Listeners right now are like, wait, that's an option?
Yeah, no, unfortunately only Anthony has that button, guys. I would use it more if I could.
So I look, everybody gets annoyed, especially non-Laker people get annoyed when you mention anything about Lonzo Ball and his intangible effect on the Lakers. But he, I believe tonight, was
team high in plus minus.
Team high plus 24. And he did that by only scoring 8 points, but he had 6 freaking steals, 7 assists, 6 rebounds. He only shoots 5 times, right? 2 of 3 from 3. Although it's kind of too bad that they counted it as a miss, but his one miss on the night was late in the shot clock. He had to throw like a pseudo weird skyhook thing, like skyhook heave, go running away from the basket because
he was just trying to emulate his old boss with like the baby hook. And Magic was like, you know, he texted, there was a text waiting for Lonzo, like, you know, man, hey, that's, I want you to be the next me too. Just maybe not that move. Just not yet.
Right. But look, there's going to be a ton of time, I think, to talk about Lonzo and his impact on these Lakers. But look, everybody who wants to knock him for his dad and knock whatever for his weird shot, like, you guys need to really calm down a little bit.
He's so good at so many other things. This is what we've been saying all year. It really doesn't matter. If he just, like, shoots like he's been shooting in January or since January, then he's going to be fine.
I would go so far as to say that Julius Randle and Lonzo Ball have become litmus tests of
yes, how, of whether or not you actually watch the Lakers.
Right. Those guys,
you can tell who has the outdated takes.
Right. And the people who knock Lonzo's shot, like, you haven't watched him, not just,
I mean,
since
you can knock
back
his shot. Like, you can say it looks bad,
but you,
like,
can't
it does
say
look,
it doesn't
it
produce.
It looks terrible, but it's going in. It doesn't matter.
Right.
It's like he could shoot a granny, and if he was shooting, you know, like 38% from three, it doesn't matter.
It's reached a point with Lonzo when he shoots earlier on in the year, when he would shoot and he would make it, you'd be like, whoa, hey, it went in, you know, but it's,
you could hear the crowd almost like all do that in Lakers games, which is probably why he shot worse at home than on the road.
But I, it's reached that point where the shot goes in and you do a fist pump versus, like, you know, wipe your brow. And with Randle, like, anytime I hear people say that, like, he can't defend anything, I just I immediately...
Now, he's tailed off since the start of the year, but he's still a good defender. He's a plus defender, and he's been a big part of the Lakers' defensive success.
Yeah. I mean, it took Goran Dragic, who is... I mean, he's lost a step at this point in his career, but it took like five or six different moves and kind of like an over-the-shoulder weird layup thing to score on Randall. And I think Dragic would say that like that was more luck than skill finishing that play.
Yeah, and just on the Dragic note really quickly, his random feuds with Lakers bench guards continues from the Sasha Vujacic days. We'd get into fights with him. That was like apparently related to the national team stuff. Then there was him squaring up with Clarkson last year, or Clarkson squaring up with him last
year.
That
was good.
And then tonight, Isaiah Thomas tried to pull his pants down while he was falling down from a rebound. So Goran Dragic, just Lakers bench guards and him, they just don't get along. It's just never going to happen for him.
And it's kind of funny, too, because like Goran Dragic's biggest stan in the media is Amin Alhassan, and he hates the Lakers, too.
Well, see, there you go.
So it
well, didn't Amin Alhassan probably help draft Goran Dragic?
Yeah, he did.
So there you go.
Yeah.
Other thing we were talking about Isaiah, before we go to the next break, but we were talking about Isaiah Thomas, and Magic Johnson also liked what he saw, and he is about to put to the test whether or not you can tamper with your own player, because he just said, at Isaiah Thomas, after scoring 29 points tonight and leading the at Lakers to victory, is starting to looking like his old self. And so Magic liking what he's seeing.
Please, Magic, do not re-sign this guy in the offseason.
Like, Magic, please... just keep it to the Lakers players. I really don't want to have to do another show where we joke about you tampering again. I feel bad every time because I know you're trying your best. And, you know, also amazing reply from user D'Angelo Russell's iPhone. Just tweeted at Magic, re-sign at J30 Randall and at Isaiah Thomas and bring in PG-13. Almost a solid offseason plan.
I'm fine with it, minus the Thomas thing. And then... Magic,
honestly,
don't
Thomas keeps playing like this. I'm with that.
Don't retweet it, Magic. Don't like it either. Just
there are three likes. It's one of them, Magic. It's time to find out. 12 likes.
Oh, God.
None of them are Magic. That would have been legitimately hilarious if he had accidentally hit like on that. There's no way Magic Johnson reads his notifications.
No, Magic doesn't even do his own tweeting. All right,
yeah,
so
there's some. Let's, no, come on. He has to do his own tweeting.
No, he really doesn't. That's sourced information. He does not do his own tweeting.
Oh, report Anthony Irwin, Magic Johnson, not responsible for the abomination that is Magic Johnson's Twitter account.
Well, he definitely is the one who is saying like what he wants tweeted out there, but he isn't the one personally tweeting.
Oh,
I know way too much on this topic. We're going to take a quick second here. On the other side, we are going to get to the topic of the day of this show is how close are these Lakers to being a playoff contender, whether it be this year, how close could they have come, or next year? All of that good stuff here in a second. So I'll form it like this. I'll formulate my opinion like this. So here's this honestly stemmed from while I was watching the game. I tweeted out, I'm 100% when I say this. You ready? Here it comes. The Lakers would have been a playoff contender if not for Tyler Ennis. And I
wow, that's a really hot take.
Is it really? Like, Tennis
just Tyler Ennis. I think if we're saying just Tyler Ennis is what kept the Lakers from the playoffs, then that is a little bit hotter than I am willing to go.
No.
Okay.
I'm not saying. So here's where, you know, I'm going to litigate my own.
The Lakers were 8 points per 100 possessions worse with Ennis on the floor than with him on the bench.
Yeah.
That might be the largest swing on the team. That's amazing.
It has
this year.
To be. In terms of, yeah. And if you take into account sample size too, but here's the way I would put it, and here's how I would defend my point. And I honestly, again, I 100% stand by this. Ennis, like you said, made the team 8 points worse every time he was on the court per 100 possessions. And now I would also say that the Lakers are heading into last night's game. They were four games back in the loss column. So it's not like you're talking about some huge gap, right? And if you basically replace Ennis with a NBA, an average NBA backup point guard, we'll say Devin Harris, right? Just he seems to me like the most mediocre point guard in the NBA right now.
Is he even mediocre anymore?
I don't know. I mean, who'd you say is like mediocre?
When you
think mediocre point guard,
you're putting me on the spot, man. I don't want to say a take that I end up regretting.
Oh, come on. Say a name. I'm the one all the way out here on a limb already.
I'm going to go with, I don't know, like, I guess, honestly, like Eric Bledsoe at this point.
Okay, cool.
We're saying like average starting point guard?
Well, I was a starter, bench,
whatever. Oh, you're saying bench?
Yeah,
bench. No, that's deeper than I need to go. Fine, Devin Harris,
right.
Sure.
Yeah, that's what I'm thinking. Is that like if the Lakers had Devin Harris instead of Tyler Ennis here, that they would have, I don't think the loss of Lonzo would have been as... It would have been tough, as we've seen since he's come back, because he is, and to his credit, he's ridiculously good already. But
hashtag Lonzo effect.
But if you are just talking about how do the Lakers tread water over that stretch while they missed Lonzo for upwards of a month or more than a month, how would they have handled that if it was Devin Harris and not Tyler Ennis? And fortunately, look. Some of my point is mitigated a little bit because Brandon Ingram did show point guard ability, and that did keep the Lakers afloat or get them back into the situation that they're currently in right now. But still, what it comes back to is it took, 10 games or so for Luke to finally go away from Ennis and go to Ingram in the starting lineup. And if those 10 games, I would imagine a lot
of
those...
Well, Hart in the starting lineup, but like right. With Ingram at point
yes.
guard.
Yeah, that's what I meant. If I would imagine those 10 games kind of sort of coincided with Ennis in that 9-game losing streak, right, that they went on. And I would imagine Ennis played a pretty significant part in ensuring that the Lakers lost 9 straight games there. Vegas was probably a huge Tyler Ennis fan, if we're being completely honest. But if they say they go 4-6 instead of 0-9 or 3-6 instead of 0-9, that puts them one game back in the loss column for the playoffs, and that immediately makes them a playoff contender. And now, if you were to combine that with starting Julius Randle from the get-go, as everybody thought that he was supposed to start from the get-go, then they might even be in the playoffs, right? Like they.
Well, yeah, there's a strong argument to be made because since January 1st, so since the start of the new year, that seems like that's a nice cutoff point. That is 26 games of the Lakers season. They are 14th in the NBA in net rating. So upper half of the league, outscoring opponents by 1.2 points per 100 possessions. In just the Western Conference, they would not be a playoff team, at least by they're the 10th best team in the Western Conference by net rating. So they wouldn't be a playoff team by net rating. But what's important is record. Sometimes you can outplay your net rating. They'd still be one spot. They'd be the 9 seed right now by record since January 1st. And so they'd be flirting with the playoffs. If they had played like this from the start of the season, they would definitely be flirting with the playoffs.
And that's all that I'm kind of getting to. And look, it kind of sounds like criticism, right? The what if game is always going to sound like criticism because you're kind of saying, well, you're knocking Luke for not starting Randle. You're knocking the front office for keeping Tyler Ennis and thinking that that was a decent answer or a solution to back up a rookie point guard. But
in defense of all that, though, that's like playing the result a little bit. Like you have to learn. Nobody is going to make every single correct decision from the jump.
Mm-hmm.
Like we can't really factor in like, well, what if, you know, those things that went right, but these other things they had made the wrong call on. Like nobody's going to make the right call 100% of the time.
I agree.
So I think that we have to kind of give them the benefit of the doubt there. Although these two specific calls
might
have been a little bit more obvious.
Yeah.
But still, like that is playing the result a little bit.
And now the idea of going to Ingram as a point guard might have saved them a few wins, right? So like maybe if they have Devin Harris on the team, we don't see the growth that we have seen from Brandon Ingram, right? So to your point,
or Derrick Rose, I guess in this case, God. Because that was who they almost signed.
No, Rajon Rondo, right, was one of the names.
Or Rondo, yeah.
Rondo, I think would have been okay.
Yeah, Rondo at this point is like a broke homeless person's ball. He's like Ball if Ball didn't actually impact winning and instead just chased stats that made it look like he was trying to impact winning.
I just envisioned an actual broke homeless person's ball. Like if they're just playing with a ball in like the back alley.
Okay.
Kind of thing.
Oh, my God. So I should have said Lonzo. But
right.
Yes. I think the bigger question that this almost leads me to is not like it's not the other reason, like, we aren't doing this to criticize Luke or to criticize the front office. It's more of, what does this mean for the team going forward?
Yep.
That they're this good with this roster since January 1st. That's not, like, a lot of the time it's kind of dangerous to say, okay, well, this team did this well after the All-Star break. They have momentum. Them going into the offseason, they're going to be better next year, because like half the teams give up in the league after the All-Star break. So that's another thing that you have to factor in. And not half the teams, but a decent amount of teams in the NBA give up after the All-Star break. But going forward, like, how good can this team be if just allowed to grow? Like, let's just say they re-sign Julius Randle, they sign, you know, some average role players this summer, and they let the young core get another year of growth. I still think that that's a team that, you know, I think could probably come closer to competing for, could probably compete for a playoff spot next year. I don't know that they will get one. It would depend on the caliber of veterans that they signed to take Lopez and KCP's place. But Ingram's going to be another year better. We've seen how big of strides he can make, both figuratively and literally. And Lonzo is going to be a lot better in his second year. Kuzma's going to be better in his second year. Josh Hart's going to come back strong and be in the rotation right from the get-go. From what we've seen over the last couple games, Ivica Zubac looks like he might not be as left for dead as a lot of people thought that he was. And he could maybe reinsert himself, at least as a backup center. And so there's all these things, like these young guys that are probably just going to continue taking steps forward that, you know, this team, they could build organically. They don't have to sign LeBron and Paul George. They could build organically and see where that takes them.
And well, and,
for at least another year.
Well, and let's say they just walk it all, they bring it all back. Everybody. Lopez.
Or re-sign KCP and Lopez to the same salary on a one-year deal?
Nope. No, I would would hope that they would be able
just
to
just completely
sign.
Walk it back.
Yeah, but let's say this exact roster goes into next season as it is currently constituted, maybe with, well, hopefully with an improvement at the backup point guard position. That's a 40-win, that's a 40-plus win team, in my opinion.
Maybe.
So, like, right now they are on pace for, I think it's 34, 35-ish wins.
Yeah.
Do you think Lonzo's improvement, Randall's continued improvement, Ingram's improvement, Kuzma's improvement, and not to mention the consistency in thinking.
I'm nitpicking, but I'd say, like, 38 or 39.
Okay.
You know me, man. Under promise, over deliver.
This is like one of those moments where I just have to laugh and not sign off on you. And that, like, 38 or 39 wins.
Embrace debate. Are the Lakers a 38 or 39 win team, or a 41 or 42 win team?
It's like when
Powell, these are the hot takes that you have come to expect from Locked On Lakers.
When Powell
watch
was,
Anthony and I fist fight on air about Marvel movies.
When Powell was a Laker, I used to say that he was a 20 and 10 guy. And my dad would always make sure to tell me, well, actually, he's averaging 19-9. Like, I wanted to strangle him. I wanted to strangle my own father. You can tweet that out. Locked On Lakers out of context. But this is, if Harrison was sitting right next to me right now, after I make the case for a 5-win improvement, if they, let's say they finish with 35 wins this year, which they could, but let's, and I'm saying that they could improve next year 5 more wins with the improvements of Lonzo, Ingram, Randall, Kuzma, Ball, and the continuity of having all these guys together. Because the offensive improvement, there has been offensive improvement as the year went along, and I think that has a lot to do with the fact that these guys are learning to play with each other, and they are able to open up Luke's system. Right.
Well, but that's also the other thing. If you come back with the same roster but with new veteran additions, then they have to rebuild that chemistry again in a lot of ways.
Well, but that's what I'm saying.
Not with everyone, but with some guys.
If they were to bring back this roster, the major pieces of this roster, and then maybe only add like a backup point guard. And now I'm not saying that this is what I would prefer. I would prefer that they sign.
Oh, would you prefer them to add Paul George and LeBron?
I think so. But if they were to just add an NBA caliber backup point guard this upcoming offseason, and then let the development spur their growth moving forward, I think that's a 40-plus win even team, in my opinion. These guys are good, man. Like, Poor Miami had no idea what to do with them defensively, and Eric Spoelstra.
Can Miami nightlife affect the home team?
Ask Matt Moore. I think he would say
I had somebody tweet at me. They're like, well, none of the Lakers' young guys are old enough to go out yet. And I was like, that's actually a good point. Fairly the Lakers just need to continue fielding a roster of teenagers. It's the LeVar Ball plan. Just sign all the Ball brothers. None of them can go out and drink.
And a cousin, too, right?
We just found out. Yeah, I guess there's a cousin. I did not know. And then, like, 500 of you inform me that this joke that I made was actually somewhat accurate, and it was like, apparently there's a cousin of the Balls in Chino Hill still playing.
Yep.
I'm almost curious to like go and interview his dad, see what his dad has to say.
Yep.
Let's build a new monster. Let's build a new monster.
So yeah. So if you were to say, like, are the Lakers capable of being a playoff team next year? Because the last 2 years, we flat out said no.
They're capable. I don't think it's guaranteed by any means, but they're very capable.
Okay.
Like, they'd have to have a somewhat favorable schedule. Some things would have to break right. They'd have to start strong. They couldn't come out like kind of like on and off out of the gate like this team did. But yeah, I think it's very clear that they could be in contention. They'd need a couple breaks, but they could very easily be in contention for a playoff spot next year. And I did not expect to say that coming out of this season.
And
who knows? They could lose every game the rest of the way, and then we'll be feeling differently.
And that's before, by the way, that's before we get to talking about the additions that they could make this year. We're just saying that with organic growth, this team is capable of making the playoffs next year. That's just organic growth. The ceiling rises exponentially, as we have seen with Clarkson and as we have seen with Nance, though the Cavs lost again last night.
Well, so scenes from the Cavaliers' loss. Clarkson was ejected for pulling a Jackie Moon and throwing a ball at Dario Saric, and then like thrown out with 12.2 seconds left. So your update on the Laker babies in Cleveland.
Did he hit him? Like, do you know if he hit him?
Yeah, he hit him.
Nice. All right. Etiquette.
The temper flared and he was thrown out. So,
etiquette, Clarkson.
I can't wait to hear what Clarkson's quotes are from after that game, because we all know that he's more than happy to say some not safe for work advice that Kobe gave him.
He's like, strike. Or if he says, like, I dared that guy to charge the mound and he didn't do it.
Yeah.
He was leaning over the plate. He flipped his bat. It's baseball season almost, guys. You guys are – those of you who – those three of you listening right now who are excited about the Dodgers this year.
I'm not one of them.
All right. That'll do it for this episode of the Locked On Lakers podcast. As always, make sure you guys leave your questions or comments on the iTunes reviews with a 5-star review, and we will get to it. You can follow the show on Megaphone/Panoply, iTunes, TuneIn, Stitcher, Today's Fast Break, Spotify, Alexa, Lakers Nation, where Harrison writes, Lakers Outsiders, where I write. You can follow us both on Twitter. Harrison is at HMFagan. I am at Anthony Irwin LA. Have a great rest of your day, everybody. This is fun. I enjoy talking about the Lakers when they are fun. And
a lot more fun to talk about a winning team. I'll say that. I'm not a fan anymore, but it's a lot more fun to cover this team when they're relevant.
Unless you're Danny LaRue and Nate Duncan. Right. Those are the only two people who are.
Well,
out
Anthony,
there.
You got to take into account the Pacers and Jazz young cores and how promising they are.
What the bleep are their young cores? Like, are they counting Victor Oladipo?
I honestly could not. I mean, Victor Oladipo would kind of count, right?
If you're making the count, if you're making the cutoff 25.
How old is Victor Oladipo? That's a good question.
But like, you can't. Here's my problem with – all right, I know I did the outro and everything, but I want to literally –
he's 25, so are we counting a 25-year-old lottery pick?
Right. You're going to compare a 25-year-old lottery pick to a
– you know, at that point, LeBron's part of the Cavs young core.
Right. Like, it's just their stance on this is asinine. They're going to keep moving the goalposts to make sure that the Lakers continue to look dumber. But the only people who
you know what one surefire way to get engagement is, as you found out, is rile up a fan base. And so who has the biggest fan base in the NBA? Well, like probably the Knicks, but maybe the Lakers. Like it's Knicks or Lakers. And Knicks fans kind of know their team sucks. And so like if you said the Knicks have the worst young core, like the Knicks fans would be like, yeah, I mean, that's a fair point. You know, maybe
you're telling me the Knicks fans are self-aware. The same people who called Madison Square Garden the mecca of basketball.
They're not self-aware. They hate their own team more than you probably do.
That might be true.
Yeah. And so Lakers fans very much like this team right now. So what's a way to get some people to react to your podcast is go ahead and say that the Lakers are the worst young core out of a group of eight.
It's like all these
teams, the Sixers, Celtics, Bucks, Nuggets, Wolves, you can make arguments. Like, you might disagree with them, but you can make arguments for all of those teams, I would say. Right? Do you disagree that you could at least have a debate about the Lakers being worse than any of those teams?
Sixers, Celtics,
Bucks, Nuggets, Wolves.
Sixers, Celtics, Nuggets, yes.
You wouldn't debate. Wolves. Or you would be able to have a debate.
Right.
The Bucks have Giannis. Giannis is younger than you think. Giannis is like, 23.
He's 23, but
he's part of the young core, and he's like an MVP, so Giannis counts. Giannis, to me, is so much far better than like any Laker right now that I'd still put them over
My problem with that thinking is that like Anthony Davis has been for his entire career one of the NBA's best players, right? And
yeah.
That organization has continued to like just failed and failed and failed and failed to get pieces that surround him, right?
Yeah.
And now you can ask the question. I think it's a fair question to ask. Is it easier to get the superstar, or is it easier to get the pieces that surround the superstar? And now if you're the Lakers, I think it's easier to get the superstar. Whereas I, you know, for a team like Milwaukee, they have the superstar there, but they, for whatever reason, they haven't. I have watched the way too
okay,
much.
Okay, but still, like, my point is that you can make a debate, I guess, about those teams. Like, the
sure.
Jazz and the Pacers?
No.
Come on, man.
No.
You're just lying to yourself.
Right. And even, like, I don't know, man. Like, I'm not infatuated with the Celtics young pieces. I think it helps the Celtics young pieces that they have Kyrie Irving.
Yeah, I'd be curious to know if they're counting Kyrie Irving because he's 25.
And you're going to compare Kyrie Irving to Lonzo Ball right now. Like, it's just, yeah. it's 25 is kind of a ridiculous place to put the age limit at. Like, at that point, you're kind of already the
That's
person
where it's
got to
be, because there's no way the Pacers are in there without Oladipo.
I think somebody in my mention said that it was going to be, that the cutoff was 25. But
yeah.
In my opinion, that's putting the age limit way too high, because by the time you're 25, you are kind of sort of the player that you're going to be.
You're having a different debate at that point.
Yeah, you're talking about actual.
And I still don't know that I would take those teams, like the Pacers' future over the Lakers, because their guys are so much older.
No, there is no argument for the Pacers.
That's to me what the young core argument should be. Is like, what could this young core develop into? Like, not they're at their peak of development.
Sixers, fine. With Embiid and Simmons, fine. You and I have had that debate already. Yeah. Celtics, I don't know if there is a debate in terms of just young pieces, unless you're including Irving, but I don't think you should. I just don't think there's a debate between like Terry Rozier, Jason Tatum, who has fallen off of a cliff. I think I kind of like, who's the kid from Cal?
Jaylen Brown.
Jaylen Brown. Like, I like some of what he does, and I think he's going to be good. But I don't think he's so much better than say, like Julius Randle or Brandon Ingram, that it's just asinine to put the Lakers in that discussion. And when you put the Lakers at eighth and the Celtics at second, that's what you're basically saying, is that it's asinine to compare the Lakers to the Celtics young core. And it's just those guys, look, man, they strike me. I've met Danny. Danny is a really nice guy, but he strikes me as the kind of guy who just refuses to acknowledge that he could ever be wrong. And when you continue to double down and double down and triple down and quadruple down and quintuple down on a stupid take, all that it comes off as is that you're rooting against the players that the Lakers currently have on their roster. It's just like Skip Bayless, who continues to crap on LeBron for his own personal brand.
That might be the first time that anybody has ever compared those two guys to Skip Bayless.
But that's what they're doing. But that's exactly what they're doing. They're going to die on this hill that somehow the Lakers' young core is not very good, and it's just because they refuse to acknowledge the very possibility that they're wrong.
Start like an East-West podcast war?
Well, we're both on the West Coast. So.
Oh, are we?
Yeah.
Oh, well, yeah. North-South
North-South
podcast
South.
War.
North-South. Oh, man. I don't want to be in the South. Oh, man. But, yeah, it's just such a dumb point that they're making, and it's too bad because they are really smart, but they continue to make themselves look really, really stupid by making points like this. It's just and they're going to keep on moving those goalposts. They're going to keep on making themselves look dumber. And all that they're going to do is lose a bunch of the reputation. And look, there's enough Laker hatred out there. There's enough, like, whatever the opposite of Lakers exceptionalism out there, that they might continue to get listeners. But I'm just telling you right now, it's kind of nice to have the Laker fan base on your side. And if you're going to keep on crapping on the Laker fan base, eventually you're going to be proven wrong. History is going to tell you you're going to be proven wrong. And when you get proven wrong, you're not going to have that fan base. Nobody's going to want to listen to you. And you're going to come off looking like a couple of idiots.
What did the process call it when they went back and they read the receipts of, like, everybody that had criticized Sam Hinkie, or, like, Philadelphia's process when they, like, started playing what?
Something Armageddon, right?
Yeah, it was RT Armageddon.
Yeah.
And so I have a feeling that Lakers fans might be up for something like that at some point.
No, what I'm going to do is I'm going to go back through, because I...
Are you going to read the RT... Are you going to lead the RT Armageddon?
Yeah. Hell yeah.
All right.
I'm going to do it on the show. Why not? If they do all dumb right. stuff, like, if they do dumb stuff, they deserve to be called out for being dumb if they're going to keep calling themselves smart.
And
if
they're going to regulators mount up.
If they're going to act as if they're so much smarter than everybody, you can't then be stupid. Those two things don't go hand in hand. I really
wanted to set you up for this Ranthony Irwin, because Ranthony, yeah, there we go.
It's been a long time since I've gone on.
We just split. Like, you did the hot take and I made a pun, but only one of us was being genuine, and it was you.
All right.
I think that we should end on a little bit more of a positive note.
I think so. Too.
Noted, there is one fan, at least, around the NBA of the Lakers' young core, one Dwayne Wade, who was praising Lonzo Ball after tonight's game. He praised him so much, Bill Orme had to use three tweets to get it all out there. And he said, he has a great feel for the game. He doesn't play for statistics. He plays to win. He moves the ball. His IQ of the game is incredible. He's athletic. Everybody talks about his shot, but he's been shooting that way his whole life. He can knock shots down. He's good, man. He's a good basketball player. Everyone expects him to come in and be Kobe Bryant. Kobe Bryant wasn't Kobe Bryant when he came in. He had to work it. He had to work to it. So he has a long career, hopefully, in front of him, and we'll see how it shakes out. Dwayne Wade, he did everything but yell, like, big baller brand at the end of it.
Well, Dwayne Wade
is this tampering? Did Dwayne Wade just recruit Lonzo Ball to the Heat?
No. I'd go the opposite way. He's positioning himself in case LeBron goes to the Lakers this year. Dwayne Wade could then slide himself into the Lakers thing. He's already on Lonzo's good side. He's already on the big baller brand's good side. He's obviously on the more important guy, LeBron's good side.
Oh, stay woke.
Yeah.
Dwayne Wade is ready for a different beach to retire on.
The better beach. No, yeah. South Beach is pretty tough to beat. I want to go there so badly. All right, that'll do it. That'll do it for this episode.
You had Lakers fans on your side for, like, the whole pot. You had finally gotten everyone back, and then you criticized the beaches here. And now everyone's going to hate you again.
I'm going to leave before I do more damage. Have a good one, everybody. We'll talk to you again mañana.